Well, I think people that want to go into business for themselves that are not only creating their own job, but they're masters of their own destiny.
You're listening to Not Another Business Show, inspiring entrepreneurs to think smart, not small. Brought to you by Daunted to Done, your virtual project manager. To implement and execute your business ideas, you need Daunted to Done.
This week on Not Another Business Show, the experts and I explore business startup. What makes someone want to get into their own business? What are the things to watch out for when you're starting up? And what are the things that you should know but maybe hadn't thought about? Welcome to episode 2 of Not Another Business Show. This week, as we examine all things startup, I'm going to share my business journey and my startup stories. And I say stories because, as you will hear, I have suffered my share of failures as well as successes along the way. At the intro, we heard from Bernie Ripoll, the Federal Shadow Minister for Small Business, saying it's his belief that intrinsically entrepreneurs want to be the masters of their own destiny. But what is it that makes an entrepreneur an entrepreneur? From the time I was about 5, I knew I wanted my own business. Now, probably because my parents were small business owners themselves, and that's what I knew. When I was 5, my folks opted for a tree change and we left Sydney to buy a little general store in northern New South Wales. It opened at 5 every morning and closed at 10. So I didn't grow up wearing any rose-coloured glasses about business. I knew from the start that it was bloody hard work. I worked behind the counter, I stacked the soft drinks, I packed the potatoes, which is the worst job ever. But still, even with all of those long days, no holidays and never eating a meal together, I knew that this working for yourself bit was what I wanted to do. But what about other people? I spoke to the retail guy, Christian Marnie, about this very question.
I can only talk about my own journey. I don't want to, I suppose, assume too much about what other people's motives are. But for me, it's very much around an intrinsic motivator being autonomy, you know, just being able to direct your own life and live by your own set of rules. And, you know, that feeds a whole satisfaction and fulfillment element as well. So I think at large, generalizing here, people get into small business so that they're the masters of their own destiny.
I'm still not convinced that we all have the same internal motivators to start our own business. So I interviewed a range of people on the subject, and it turns out that, yes, being the master of our own destiny seems like a pretty strong motivator. Matt Dunstan from Rising Tide Ventures made a really good point, though, that I hadn't considered.
Yeah, so when people are thinking about starting a business, it's often a long-held ambition that they've always wanted to do something. And I think a lot of that is about, you know, kind of this personal drive for creativity and expression. And so people often say, oh, I've always wanted to do this. And they get this impetus built up until they reach a point where they say, now I'm going to go, or I've got this great idea. Some people, it's not quite so noble and glamorous, and they actually have to do it out of necessity. I find a lot of people starting businesses are doing it because their home or family circumstances mean that they can't travel into a regular job. They need to create something at home. And increasingly, people who are, you know, maybe a little older in the workforce are finding themselves without a job, maybe finding it a little hard to get a job, and so they turn to self-employment as an alternative. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that. And just a little side note, it's really interesting to see in the current Australian Bureau of Statistics research that, you know, the startups aren't the 20-something hipsters getting around on their single-speed bikes. It's the majority of people who start a business are in their 40s to 50s. That drive to start their own business or create something for themselves is probably something that they've been dreaming of for quite a while.
So a lot of people are finding their working situations changing. Redundancies are on the rise in certain sectors and changing for family circumstances. What about the people who get into business for the wrong reasons? Who are they? Chatting to Andrew Griffiths, Australia's number one small business author, he believes people leaving the workforce often leap for the wrong reasons. It's a different way of thinking, and they often have never had to drive a business before.
They really hate their job, so they've decided to get into a small business. And it's not so much that they actually want to get into a small business, it's just that that's a better option than being in a job that they hate. And I think that's a dangerous place to go. Yeah, that's a dangerous reason to start, because a small business is actually not for everyone. And it's complicated. It's hard. There's risk involved. You've got to be a self-starter. You're going to have to develop new skills that you probably haven't got. You've got all of those kind of things that fall into place. So on top of sometimes people get into a business for the wrong reason, sometimes they also get into the wrong kind of business. So people fall in love. I had a friend of mine. He's a really smart guy, and his operations manager oversaw boat refits and boat building and all that kind of stuff. And he wanted out, so he bought himself a franchise, which was basically going around and cleaning cars. And of course, he was bored within a week. And he's going, well, I've spent $100,000 on this franchise. I'm cleaning cars all day long, and there's a limited growth opportunity. I don't want to do this. I don't want to clean cars all day. And he had to kind of do it before he realized that that's perhaps not what he wanted.
During my chat with Andrew, I discovered that people are also entering into business with rose-coloured glasses.
So in the startup, everything's fabulous. We see all the wonderful things. I'm going to go into partnership with my best friend. It's going to be fabulous. All these customers are going to come along. We have rose-coloured glasses on. And I think that, again, I'm the most optimistic person in the world. However, I believe that you've got to go into a business and you've really got to look at the downside. What if the relationship doesn't work? You know, how much is it going to cost us to do this stuff? You know, budgeting. I see people budgeting and they always overestimate how many customers they're going to get, how much money they're going to generate, and they underestimate how much everything's going to cost, how long it's going to take, all the rest of it. So, you know, I always say that when you're a startup, you've got to turn around and say, well, you've got to allow for the fact that will it still work numbers-wise if it takes twice as long, costs twice as much, and you generate half as much income in the first 6 months. If it still stacks up, then do it. And that's really brutal, but that's the way that it works.
Interesting. It's the first time I heard anyone talk about going in with your eyes open. Most people know when you want to start your own business that you need a good accountant. But chatting with Andrew was the first time the nitty-gritty of planning things going in came up in conversation. It was time I turned to an accountant to get the lowdown on the nitty-gritty of small business ownership.
My name's Robert King. I'm an accountant. Absolute paramount first thing you need to look at when you're starting a business is the structure. What is the right structure that's going to see you through not only your startup phase, but right through to the end of your business? You've sort of got to look at what your goals are and what you're trying to achieve before you even think about what structure you want to put in place. So there's a number of options there, be it a sole trader, be it a company or a trust. And the thing is, what's right for your mate that does the same thing as you might not be right for you and your circumstances. So it's really important to get good advice specific to your circumstances on getting the structure right for your business, because once that structure's in place, that's what you will use for asset protection and save you a lot of money down the track as well.
I mentioned up front that I was going to talk about my own business journey. So I can tell you that I've been involved in a mix of sole trader businesses, companies, and trusts. Each time my decision has been based in consultation with my accountant as to what is going to serve the particular business best. One of the biggest lessons I had going into my first business, though, was I really had no idea what numbers I needed to be watching and what ones didn't mean so much. It was something I was keen to know if was shared by a lot of new business owners.
A lot of business owners are really good at a P&L, but they really need to get a handle on their balance sheet and how their balance sheet affects their cash flow. Because at the end of the day, you could make $1 million in sales and you think my profit's looking great, but if you've got most of that sitting in your accounts receivable because you can't collect it, then you're going to go out of business very quickly. So very important that you look at that side of things as well.
Robert also chatted about the importance of knowing your break-even point. Most business owners I know go into business having an idea of the kind of lifestyle that they want to have. They need to be able to put the kids through school, meet the house repayments, and then they want to be able to go on holiday, have a nice car, and have a kind of what's become known now as a lifestyle business. In order to have that, we need to know how much we need to earn to meet those markers. The break-even point allows us to get a clear idea of how much business we need to be getting in the door. How I wish I had known that one going into my first business. The big question I had for Robert, though, is knowing the importance of an accountant to any business, how do you go about picking one that you're going to get along with?
A lot of questions you'll ask during the initial meeting where you'll get a feel for the accountant and how good they are at answering your questions. So you'll have a lot of questions based on your business and questions that you've got. So don't be afraid to ask those questions in the initial meeting and see how knowledgeable that accountant is in answering those questions.
I never thought going into my initial business about interviewing my accountant. Now I can say, being on my fourth business, I wish I had thought of that one much earlier on in my journey. It would have saved a lot of time and energy. While it's imperative to understand the numbers in order for a business to be successful, the single biggest learning I took away from my first business was having a solid business plan. Along with a great accountant, I believe any startup needs to have a great business coach. So I turned back to Matt Dunstan to find out his best advice for people who are starting out.
Biggest challenges, or the things that I wish for every startup, is getting in front of customers sooner. It's amazing how many people are starting out, you know, like to sit in their home office and spend a lot of time on internal, inward-facing things, you know, whether that's designing their business card or posting on Facebook or designing their website or whatever it might be, instead of going and speaking to their target market and just having the conversation that says, hey, I'm thinking about creating a product or a service that looks like this. If I did, would you buy it? And that's like the prime question and the prime piece of feedback that actually everybody needs before they go spending a lot of money on everything else in their business. So I wish everybody did that first. That's the single biggest thing that people could do to set themselves up for success later.
You know, that's another business mistake I made with the first business. I knew I was a great event planner, but I had no idea whether or not people actually wanted to utilize my services. Turns out, they didn't. But when I've chatted this through with other business owners, I often hear that they don't know where to start when it comes to finding potential clients.
You know, that's one of the fundamental questions that you've got to resolve. If you can't find the people to even get some market feedback on without asking them to pay, then how much harder is it going to be to find them when you do want them to pay? A really easy way that I've done it in the past is through some of the Facebook groups that are kind of where my potential market sits. So, for example, in early 2014, I was looking for some feedback on a new business idea, and my target market had a Facebook group. And let's face it, there's a Facebook group for everything, right? So I just jumped on there and I just asked for some help. And do you know what? It's all about authenticity. You know, I said to people, look, here's where I'm up to. I'm not trying to pretend that I'm something I'm not. This thing doesn't exist. But here's the problem that I'm really passionate about solving. And I've got a couple of ideas on how I think that might work. But I could really just use some pointers from people in this situation. Would anybody be willing to jump into a closed Facebook group with me where I can just ask some questions and get some feedback? And you know what? I had an instant focus group in 60 minutes. And the feedback I got from those people, because people are happy to help, right? People get wary if you think you're going to sell something. People are very happy to help, kind of startups and people who are being genuine and authentic. And the feedback I got from that group was invaluable. It saved me months of going down a couple of rabbit holes that I thought were on the money, but actually were not.
Any good business coach worth their weight in salt will also tell you about the need for a good business plan. This causes many business owners' stomachs to turn. We tend to shy away from the thought of being regimented, having to put our plans on paper and stick to them. We like the thought of being fluid. Turns out, though, this may not be the best idea.
Yeah, you're right. So this does come up a lot, and a lot of people shy away from the plan because for most people and for most plans that are written, it's a document rather than, a guide to growing their business. A little while ago, I delivered a presentation that I called Lean Business Planning. If I was to kind of boil that down into a couple of key principles for you, it was about thinking of or being really clear on where's this all headed, why do I care, and what's the roadmap between where I am today and that destination that I've got in mind. And, we're talking business planning rather than marketing planning right now, but if every business, forget whether it's a startup or small business or corporate, if every business was able to define those three things, where am I headed, why do I care, and what are the milestones between here and there, what's the roadmap that takes me from here to there? If you can do that, then the business plan is no longer just a document that's got a really nice cover and very expensive binding. It actually turns it into a bit of an operational plan, and that's where I think it becomes quite valuable. So everybody should do that. It doesn't have to be a huge exercise. It can still be a one or two pager, and particularly the roadmap piece. So the roadmap piece is important because it lets you see the progression, the strategy of how you're going to reach your goal. But also, it lets you come right back and say, all right, and the very first thing I'm working on, or the very next thing I'm working on, is just this milestone. And it gives you something nice and close and concrete, hopefully, that you can start chipping away at. So plans are very important when they're done correctly. The problem with most people is they write these things and actually they don't really know why they've written it because it doesn't deliver value. The marketing plan then is, how do I switch all that on? So now that I've got my destination, now that I know why I'm doing it, now that I've got a roadmap, a master plan for, how I'm going to evolve the business over time, how do I start? Where's the light switch that I just flick that, kind of operationalizes it? And this is the marketing plan. If you go to a marketing textbook or if you go to grab a marketing plan template off the web, you're going to be bitterly disappointed because 99% of marketing plans suck. and people are looking at the wrong things. The marketing plan that people need is a plan that says, here's how people become aware of my business. Here's how I start to engage with them and demonstrate some value. Here's how I demonstrate what I have to offer. And then here's a process that my clients or prospects are likely to go through before they become a customer. The trick to this, if anyone's thinking about it, is right-sizing it for their business. So everybody has this tendency to say, well, here's the one thing that I know how to do, or the one marketing tactic that I'm really good at, or it's my favorite. That might be networking events, or it might be AdWords, or it might be Facebook interactions, whatever it is. But everybody's got their favorite. It always falls down because they might be able to generate some great kind of success or conversion at that point, but it doesn't link to anything. It doesn't then kind of flow into the next step in the marketing process or that marketing pipeline. So just thinking through, how does a customer need to go from completely unaware through to being a customer, and how do they, what's that journey that they've got to go through, is really important, because then you need to design in calls to action that help people make those steps at the appropriate point in time. So again, a marketing plan is really important, but it does have to be right size for your business. You don't want to build out this huge marketing plan that you, because you're a solopreneur, for example, that you don't have the time or the resources to actually execute on. It's just got to be something that matches the level of kind of complexity and investment that you can actually deliver on.
The big thing I learned with my second business, which, by the way, was a company. Now, this business started from scratch and was built to be the leading corporate supplier of coffee solutions within Queensland. Now, I think the single biggest difference I made with this business was that I went in with a plan and I started, as Stephen Covey talks about, with the end in mind.
Yes, yeah, so most people don't have an end in mind, or management textbooks, we'd call this a vision. What is the business going to look like in 5 years? And it gets really hard too. So a lot of people listening here might be in a partnership. There might be more than one person involved. If they're an established business, they've probably got a management team involved. And so then that even gets a little bit trickier, because then you've got to find some commonality around where's all this headed. So the vast majority of people don't. At best, they'll have a vision statement that says something like, by 2020, we will be the leading provider of services X, Y, and Z in the Australasian market. And the problem with that is they actually don't care too much about whether it doesn't mean anything. They're not invested in that goal. And so setting a direction is very closely linked to goal setting when goal setting is done well. And so there's got to be some serious thinking there. Goal setting, the destination, and your purpose, your mission, your reason for doing it is kind of the third piece in that picture. You've got to look at all three of those simultaneously, because the answer is a combination of the three. And people are really clear on what's the business going to look like in 5 years and why. Why is that important? And then specifically, measurably, I can articulate that in these sorts of goals. That can be location, it can be number of staff, it can be types of clients. You need a revenue metric in there, but the revenue metric is more about scale rather than how much am I banking. If you've got that, well, then you know where to head, right?
By starting out with a clear plan, I was able to drive that business instead of it driving me. Of course, I had moments where I had to be reactive rather than proactive, but for the most part, I've had a very clear direction on where that business is headed. So business number two is still up and running, 6 years in. Exercising my entrepreneurial tendencies, I sold it at the end of 2014 to start another business. But there are still a couple of sides to startup business that we haven't covered off yet. And for whatever reason, these things by and large seem to be heavily neglected. Now, maybe because they aren't as sexy as making sales and getting clients. Maybe because they could even be seen to lock us down a little. The first is insurances. We all need them, we know we need them, but what is it about them that causes us to put our hands over our ears and pretend that they aren't happening? Maybe it's because to really get this side of things right, you have to ask the hard questions of yourself up front. What happens if I get sick and I can't work? What happens if something happens to me? What about my stock and trade? Living in Queensland, we went through pretty big floods back in 2011, and there are a number of business owners who just never recovered, all because they didn't have the right cover. Chatting again with Bernie Ripoll, he made a great point.
Unfortunately, I think while some people may have done that, very few did. And for many others since that event, they've already forgotten. So quite sadly, I think as time passes and we don't think there'll be another 2011 event or a 1974 event, the reality is at some point it will happen. There's just no question about some point it will happen again. I think what we should all be doing, and I've seen some of the statistics on small business insurance levels, and they're quite low. Small business insure at the lowest levels of any entity in Australia, lower than residential insurance, lower than other types of business insurance. So small business people will often not insure their business or insure their own income or even insure their own stock. And in the event that something does happen, it can actually mean the end of the business.
Now, certainly people do have short memories. In fact, politicians rely on the fact that we don't hold memories.
The saddest things in life are those things that don't have to be. And whilst I get to work with some wonderful people, I also get brought in to fix problems that have occurred and that people have only just like found themselves floating to the top of the water and they suddenly realize that there is a significant issue. You've got to remember to protect and provide for the very people, the very reason that you are in business, which is yourself, your family, and those ones that you call friends. If you don't do that, it's rolling the dice, and I think all your hard work really is not worth the return.
That was Drew Brown from Sapience Financial and Investment Services. What I found really interesting in chatting with him is the roll of the dice philosophy that so many small business owners take with protecting themselves, their family, and their business. Was it really all about the money when it comes to startup? I needed to understand why Drew believes this to be the case. And he told me that in business, you need to have an idea of acceptable losses.
Part of your acceptable losses budget has to be who do you protect and provide for? If you have family responsibilities, you need to protect and provide for them. If you have friends, special needs children, favorite nephews or nieces with learning issues, you need to protect and provide. And you have to be pragmatic, but you need to apportion some level of security for them. You may not be able to afford a bazillion dollars of life insurance. I understand that. But you need to say, hey, if I get hit by the bus and go to heaven early, I'm taking the debts with me. So if you have a mortgage, make sure your mortgage debt is insured. And if you can, make sure that at least a year's worth of your income is in the insurance policy too, so that if something terrible happens to your family, the debt is paid out and there's a block of cash there to help them readjust. These types of things come down to priorities. Get yourself a budget which is for acceptable losses. At the end of the day, you have to answer this question. What can you afford to lose? If you can afford to lose your health where you can't generate an income, if that's acceptable, so be it.
Okay, so acceptable losses is a good strategy going in. But really, if you are in absolute startup mode, how do you know what kind of coverage to get now and what you can maybe put off for another day?
I would say the minimum is make sure you have life insurance sufficient to pay out all your debts and sufficient to replace a year's worth of income. Have that life insurance if you need, paid for from your superannuation fund. It's cost neutral to you, so it's more a choice you make rather than a cost you bear. Fixed business overheads or fixed business cost insurance, which means for all those fixed costs of a business, the utilities, the leasing of the property, the leasing of the cars, the cost of the accountant, the electricity, all those things that are fixed, you can actually insure that so that if you're sick or injured and cannot work, at least for a year, the fixed costs for your business can be paid. So when you recover, you have a business to go back to. And that's the main thing.
Now I get the value of insurances going in. And who knew you could use your super to pay for it? I also truly understand the value of having a business plan or a roadmap going in and allowing the plan to be fluid and grow and morph with the direction of the business. And it's something I wish I'd known earlier in my journey. Yet the other missing piece, along with insurances that are so often neglected in small businesses, especially during the startup stage, is the concept of having systems in place for the business. In speaking with my experts, it seems as though, similar to the business plans, we feel as though having systems in place will regiment the way we need to do business. There is also the belief that if it is a one or a two-person show, as is often the case in the initial startup phase, that everyone is already across every part of the business, so there's simply no need for any kind of systems or procedures.
Anyone who's doing any business will hear a lot about systemization, and I think that that is that's just a part of it. Make sure that things are flowing. Make sure that if an order comes in, it can be processed. It's like, you know, when you go into those businesses, like a new restaurant, And you're the only one in there. You order a meal, and for some reason, it takes 50 minutes to come out, and it's a salad. And you kind of go, like, really? Like, they just haven't got their systems worked out. The problem is, if you don't get that stuff sorted out quickly, everyone who goes in is going to have a bad experience, and then they're going to leave and tell their friends, don't bother going there, it's no good. So you got to make sure whatever it is that you're making your money from works. The second thing is, you have to have a very sound strategy for getting customers. I see so many businesses that can fit out a shop and it's beautifully sign written and everyone's in their fresh uniforms and it's beautiful and they're standing around, the doors open, and then there's tumbleweed kind of rolling through the store because they haven't actually got a strategy for getting business. So they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this business up and running, and then they're assuming that once they're there, people are going to come through the door. And unfortunately, it doesn't really work that way. Even if you're in a shopping center, even if you're on a major highway, even if you're in the busiest pedestrian mall in the world, you still got to have a strategy for getting people in there.
I've never thought of a strategy for getting clients. It's probably no wonder that when I started my first business, the event planning one, that I was one of those that Andrew refers to as having tumbleweeds rolling through the front door. Along with a plan for how you'll handle your clients and inquiries, it all makes sense when you hear it talked about like that. But chatting to my systems expert, Bronwyn Reed, she was explaining that systems should give your business consistency, help you to control costs, give you back control of your business, and help you to create value. She explained to me that far from constricting the way that we do business, having systems and procedures in place allows you to concentrate on the aspects of the business that you like, knowing that you've taken the time to think everything through and knowing the way that all of the parts of the business should flow. Yet with all of this advice, planning, and forethought, there is still a significant number of small businesses that are going under each year. I mentioned my first business, the event planning one, never really got off the ground. Yet there was something about business ownership that made me want to dust myself off and have another go. What is it about entrepreneurs that we can pick ourselves up and get on with it? Bernie Ripoll, the Honourable Federal Shadow Minister for Small Business, sees it like this.
In Australia, we just make too much of failure. I think sometimes we have to make mistakes, so we know that there are things we shouldn't do next time. Success is built on the back of many failures. Research in science and technology is often about making as many mistakes as possible to eliminate all of those events, and then you'll finally get to the ones that are actually the successes. Obviously, you have to do it within a capacity of being able to survive, but I think in Australia, we just make too much of failure, whether we should celebrate success much, much more.
There is a former race car driver from the US called Mario Andretti, who has a saying that I believe is completely relevant to small business owners. You never know how fast you can go until you hit the wall. It was first told to me by a client back in the 90s when I was managing a store in Sydney and we were talking about business ownership. He said to me that in America you aren't really taken seriously until you've had a few failed businesses under your belt. Yet in Australia, I know I certainly felt as though I was personally a failure when I walked away from my first business and I had to re-enter the workforce. It took me a few years to realise the value of those lessons. No forward planning and not testing my idea out with the market were lessons learnt well. And any of the other businesses I've started have never had the same issues. Still though, as successful as my coffee business was, my entrepreneurial itch, which led me to my third business, coaching corporate executives around wellness, taught me another valuable lesson, which is sometimes, even though the idea is sound, the market may not be ready to hear you. Now, I could have simply pulled the pin on that one and walked away. I could have kept plugging away on the education piece that needs to come before the uptake of wellness coaching in the corporate arena. Instead, though, I took the advice of Matt Dunstan. Remember him from Rising Tide Ventures?
I think the answer to that question, it's okay to put your business into a bit of a holding pattern or on the back burner whilst the market catches up, while you catch your breath, while your bank account, recovers. And you see this happen a lot. There are a lot of people out there who have a job to pay for their business. And that's not the goal, of course, but there is a fundamental reality to that, and there's nothing wrong with it. If when pulling out your business plan, you're still invested in the destination, the purpose, and the goal, but just need a bit more time or a few more resources behind you to make it happen, or as sometimes happens, the market's not quite ready for it, it's okay to put that on the back burner and to come back and revisit it later or to work on it part-time.
So, MBS Wellness is, for the time being, on the back burner. The executives I spoke to in doing my research were not unhappy working the long hours required and had no issues with eating on the run or grabbing something in front of their computer. Great to know I hadn't had to kill the idea, but it didn't help the fact in popping it on the back burner that I needed something else to do. So, it was back to the drawing board and looking for the next business idea. This got me wondering, if there's a shared trait amongst entrepreneurs when we're looking for business ideas. I figured the two best people to ask this were Bernie Ripoll in his role as Shadow Federal Minister for Small Business and Andrew Griffiths, Australia's number one small business author. But let's check in with Bernie first.
Oh, absolutely. Look, there's a long list of traits that make for a successful entrepreneur or small business owner. I think one of the keys has got to be somebody who can see a problem and wants to fix it. As simple as that. People have to identify where there's a gap in the market, where there's an opportunity, where there's something that needs fixing or doing. People that have got that entrepreneurial spirit of being able to identify opportunity. And I think that's one of the big character traits that really distinguishes the successful people, as well as those who really get out there and have a go.
And what about Andrew? Does he see shared traits?
They've got to have a bit of bluff. I think that they've got to be able to perhaps take on things that are beyond them, but somehow they manage to get through it. I think that bluff, certainly I've bluffed my way through most of the last 50-odd years in my life, I think. Let me assure everyone out there that most of us in small business are winging it. We're figuring out as we go. We think that everyone else has got their act together. They haven't. Okay, they're like us. They're just doing the best they can. And each year, hopefully, they're getting a little bit better about it. So having a bit of humility and the desire and the ability to maybe reach out to others is I think, an important part. And they have to be, I believe, have a sense of kindness where they want to be able to contribute to their community, where they want to make a difference, where money is an outcome. And everyone thinks, you know, entrepreneurs and small business owners, it's all about money. It ain't. Most of us are doing it. Yeah, we want a nice house. We want a nice car. But we're doing it because there's a bigger reason. We want to be our own boss. We want to make a difference. We want to be able to positively influence people around us. And I look at that as a wonderful attribute. And the thing I love about entrepreneurs these days, particularly younger ones, is that they really do have this sense of, man, I want to change the world. I want to make the world a better place. I want to help people that are less fortunate, and they do it because they just know it's the right thing to do. They don't have to be convinced to do it. They're not doing it purely to look good for others, and I find that beautiful.
Solving problems and changing the world. Personally, for probably close to two decades now, I have been driving to create something that is of service to other people. While it was great fun to run a coffee solution business, I still had a desire to bring real change to people. I thought my coaching business was going to be that, but as we discovered, my market really wasn't ready for that. It was only when I was completing the Key Person of Influence 40-week course that I realised how I could achieve it, and it came, as most solutions do, through something that comes really easily to me. I was finding my colleagues becoming overwhelmed by all of the tasks that needed completing in their business. During this particular course, we spent a lot of time working on our businesses, which created a lot of tasks that needed to be completed. As a predominantly small business audience, there was a lot of consternation over how they could continue focusing on the business that brings in the revenue for them and still find time to get everything else done. I was able to show people as we were chatting which things to focus on and how to free some time up, maybe generate some revenue which would then allow them to do more things in their business that they loved. Slowly, more and more of my colleagues were asking me how they could achieve this too, and before I knew it, I was solving a problem that a lot of small business owners had. And so, my fourth business, Daunted to Done, was born. The rise of the virtual project manager began helping my fellow business owners get the clarity, focus, and results that they had been looking for. This brought me to a question around the advantages of startup business.
People love talking to, getting in front of, making time for people who are in startup mode. And so that makes it really easy to open the door to conversations with prospective customers.
So there you have it. If you are in startup mode, you might want to think about how to make the best use of the contact list you have to develop your client list, or maybe find a mentor who can give you the guidance in the early stages of your business. As for my journey, like most entrepreneurs that I know, we're all on a road to create a better future for ourselves, our families, and if we're to listen to what Andrew Griffiths had to say, then more than a few of us are out there doing what we do to create a better world. Even with all the doom and gloom around the number of small businesses that are closing the doors each day, the stats that we're constantly being fed around the average life expectancy of a small business in Australia, we keep going. As a way to round out this episode all about startup businesses, I thought I'd refer to what Bernie Ripoll believes is to come for small businesses in Australia. He began by reminding me that for all the media doom and gloom, there are over 2.1 million small businesses in Australia, and the worth of small business to our GDP is around $330 billion per annum.
It's a massive contribution from the small business sector. Look, in the time that I've been not only interested in the role but actually looking after it, what we've seen is an increase in the total number of small businesses. And I think more and more what we'll see in the future is that small, micro and very, very micro businesses are playing an even bigger part as people transition from traditional factory jobs or large employing type jobs, large employer type jobs, to people employing themselves, so non-employing. What I see in the future there is that small business will play an even bigger role than it already is. So there's lots of opportunity out there. I think it's pretty positive. And I think, you know, the future for small business is very, very good.
Well, that brings this week's episode to an end. I hope you picked up a few nuggets of gold in there as we explored the journey that is starting up a small business. Whether it was the value of beginning with the end in mind, or how you can sort out some basic insurances or utilize your super, maybe you finally get why every small business should have their systems and procedures in place. A big thanks to this week's experts: the Honourable Bernie Ripoll, the Shadow Federal Minister for Small Business; Australia's number one small business author and all-round great guy, Andrew Griffiths; Matt Dunstan from Rising Tide Ventures; Robert King from Experian; Christian Marnie, the retail guy; and Drew Brown from Sapience. The links to contact our experts will be in the show notes, or you can find them on the Meet the Experts page on the Daunted to Done website. Don't forget to download your free checklist of the 5 essential things every startup business needs to have from the Daunted to Done website. It contains the practical strategies to help you action all of the great information shared on today's show. And last but not least, a very big thank you to you for listening in. Till next week, take care and remember, just because you're in a small business doesn't mean you can't have a smart business.
If you've enjoyed today's show, why not share a review on iTunes? And don't forget to connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at Daunted to Done. If you have an idea for an upcoming show, drop us an email to info@dauntedtodone.com.au. Not Another Business Show is brought to you by Daunted to Done, your virtual project manager.